This morning's message is entitled Engage. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, partly about the fact that we have a chicken barbecue next week and we're going to be meeting with our neighbors. The idea for a chicken barbecue came to me some time ago as I was just walking through the neighborhood here and praying and asking God and myself, what are the needs of the people here around Alden Mennonite Church? Because we're called to reach out and respond to people's needs. Jesus had the habit of responding to people's needs. And as I walk around and I walk in this neighborhood, from all outer appearances, everything seems to be okay. I don't really know for sure. What are the needs of these people? In what ways can we meet those needs? So as I was walking around, it did occur to me that one of the characteristics of our culture is that we may not really know our neighbors very well. You guys know your neighbors? I know some of mine. And then there's some others that I'm embarrassed to say, wow, they've been living pretty close and for 16 years now, and I don't really hardly know them. You know your neighbors. We don't always know our neighbors. So I wondered, what about a picnic to get to know your neighbors? And we could do that in our own neighborhoods, right? Probably be a good idea. Maybe this Christmas you could have a little Christmas party at your house and invite your neighbors. Or maybe there's still time before the weather gets too chilly to have a chicken barbecue at your house and invite your neighbors. But what do we do together here in our neighborhood here? And so the idea of a chicken barbecue crossed my mind. A lot of times chicken barbecues around here, you pay for them, right? But why not a free one? And invite our neighbors to come, not only to meet us, but to meet each other. In a neighborhood where neighbors know one another, it makes a good neighborhood. So it's a way of blessing the people around us. So somewhere along the other way, I think a few other people kind of had some ideas about a chicken barbecue, so we got one going. So this picnic that's coming up next Saturday is about engaging with our neighbors and giving them the opportunity to engage with one another. A number of years ago, we did kind of a survey in the neighborhood, and we asked people, what do you need? One of the things that a few people said was, we need something for our young people to do. So we started playing hockey out here. We started leading hockey on Saturdays, and kids would come and play hockey. And those kids kind of grew up in that sort of youth age group, moved on, but they still come out here as young adults and play hockey. So when you meet a need, sometimes things keep happening. So Saturday, we're going to meet a need for people to get to know one another in the neighborhood and for us to get to know our neighbors a little bit. Jesus, as I said, was attentive to people's needs. And as I thought about this week and the fact that we're doing a barbecue, a natural thought was to think of Jesus feeding the 5,000 and the 4,000. And we're not doing it quite that extravagant as what Jesus did. There won't be quite that many people here. And the need here is not so much food as fellowship, as relationships, getting to know one another. But I'd like to read from those two accounts this morning. In Matthew 14 and then in Matthew 15, of Jesus feeding the people, and make a few observations from those accounts. The first is in Matthew 14, starting at verse 13. Matthew 14, 13. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. So he went across the Sea of Galilee. And what had happened just before this, we read about the death of John the Baptist. And at the beginning of chapter 14, it says, at that time, Herod the Tetrarch heard the reports about Jesus, and he said to his attendants, this is John the Baptist, when he heard about Jesus. This is John the Baptist. He has risen from the dead. That's why miraculous powers are at work in him. So Herod was concerned, and then it goes on to tell the circumstances of how Herod had John the Baptist beheaded. And so Jesus now is looking for a solitary place for one of two reasons. Either this is the time when he's really kind of grieving the death of John, or because Herod is becoming aware of his ministry and Jesus is going to withdraw. He's not ready for that confrontation with all the authorities yet, which is going to bring about his death eventually, his crucifixion. And so for whatever the reason there, Jesus withdraws to a private place and needs some time alone. Now, hearing of this, that he was going off by himself, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. So the crowds started to walk around the Sea of Galilee up around the north. The Sea of Galilee is about 8 miles wide, 13 miles long. And so it's a pretty big freshwater lake, but not near as big as Lake Erie or Lake Ontario that we're familiar with. So the people could walk around the end. And evidently, they get there by about the time Jesus gets there on the other side. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and he healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so that they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and he gave thanks. And he broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. So they had a big crowd. And then I'd also like to read from chapter 15, just a little while later. Jesus again feeds a crowd of people. Chapter 15, starting in verse 29. Jesus left there and went along the Sea of Galilee. So he had been in sort of a Gentile area. He left that area of Tyre and Sidon, went back down along the Sea of Galilee, and then he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. Great crowds came to him, bringing the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and laid them at his feet. And he healed them. The people were amazed when they saw the mute speaking and the crippled made well, the lame walking and the blind seeing, and they praised the God of Israel. Jesus called his disciples to him and he said, "I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me 3 days and they have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry or they may collapse on the way." His disciples answered, "Where would we get enough bread in this remote place to feed such a crowd?" It's hard for me to believe they asked that question after the last experience. "How many loaves do you have?" Jesus asked. 7, they replied, "and a few small fish." He told the crowd to sit down on the ground, and then he took the 7 loaves and the fish, and when he had given thanks, he broke them, and he gave them to his disciples, and they in turn to the people. They all ate and they were satisfied. Afterward, the disciples picked up 7 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was 4,000, besides men and children. After Jesus had sent the crowd away, he got into the boat and went to the vicinity of Magadan. So we certainly can't look at everything in these accounts of Jesus' feeding these people, but one commonality that we find in both of these stories is about Jesus and his compassion. Jesus cared about people. He cared about their needs. In the first story, Jesus is actually trying to get away by himself, right? He needs some time alone. But right about the time he gets to the other side of the lake, there's a crowd of people waiting for him. So when he encounters these people, he sees their need, it says, and he has compassion on them. Perhaps he saw that there were many who were sick. Perhaps he saw them being helped along by their friends or their family to come and find him. Or maybe some were struggling on their own. Perhaps he saw other needs there as well. Whatever the case, Jesus is moved to action. He doesn't say, "You know, could you guys come back next week? I just need a little time alone right now." He doesn't just give them a quick greeting and then move on. He stops and he takes his time and his energy to address their need. He's moved with compassion. In the second account, it shows that he's actually thinking ahead. He's thinking about what people's needs might be. Now, you might wonder about this if he went on teaching for 3 days without addressing the food issue. You might wonder what I thought if I preached for the next 4 hours this morning. You'd be like, don't you know we have dinner at home? So I don't know what was going on there. But before he sent the people away, Jesus was thinking of them. He's like, they've been here 3 days. They're going to be hungry. They need food. He sees their need. And so he calls on the disciples to feed them. That's in contrast to the earlier account where the disciples bring it to Jesus' attention and say, hey, these people need food. Let's send them away. And Jesus says, no, you feed them. Feed them yourselves. Jesus has compassion on the people. Compassion means that we do something about a need. Compassion is the feeling of concern for another person's need that leads us to take action to meet that need. That's what compassion is. It's not just a feeling of being sorry for somebody, but it's where we feel it, we know it enough that we say, I'm going to do something. I'm going to do what I can to help out with this need here. So Jesus is a person of compassion. We want to be people of compassion. As we interact, as we engage with our neighbors, whether it's here on Saturday, with the neighbors around your home, let's be people of compassion. Now, how do you get or develop compassion? Because sometimes I don't always have compassion for people. The Bible speaks often of God's compassion. God has compassion for us. God has been moved to meet our needs. He's met our need for a Savior. He meets our need of the things that we need in order to survive. Jesus heals the people. The New Testament speaks in a number of places of Jesus' compassion. When we receive and experience God's compassion, I believe that overflows from us. When we recognize that in our lives, it'll lead us to be people of compassion. To have compassion, we first have to get in touch with the need of another. So I think one of the things that also inspires compassion in us is when we've had an experience of need or of difficulty, and we're able to begin to identify with others in those places. So let's be people of compassion. Often we may need to turn to God to help us meet the needs that we see. The disciples needed Jesus' help to feed the people. They couldn't do it on their own. Jesus, as we see him, chose to give the broken bread to who first? He gives it to the disciples. And then the disciples pass it out to the people. I think God chooses to work through us. We're to work in partnership with God when it comes to being filled with compassion and to meeting need. So I want to encourage you as you meet with people on Saturday here at the barbecue, as you interact with your neighbors, with the people at work, listen to them. Consider what God has given you to share with them in their need. What's God given you? What do you have from God to offer others? One lady who called me this week to RSVP for the picnic said it was an answer to prayer. Saturday is going to be her birthday. And though she has somebody to be with from her family in the morning, she's a widow, and her granddaughter is going to be able to come later in the evening, she was thinking, who am I going to eat dinner with on my birthday? Evidently, she didn't like the idea of being alone on her birthday. And so she wanted to tell me that she's really looking forward to the barbecue. She has somebody to eat with on her birthday, the evening of her birthday. God gave us something to share with somebody else. We didn't even know the need was there, but God did. God cares about this woman. A number of people RSVP'd that they're sorry they can't be here Saturday because they have some other plans already for Saturday, but they think it's a great idea for a neighborhood to come together and enjoy a meal together. There's others who have RSVP'd and said, yeah, we'll be there. We'd like to come. So I hope that each of you is able to be here also. Be people of compassion. So this opportunity, what is it? It's an opportunity. This picnic is an opportunity to hang out with our neighbors, an opportunity for them to hang out with one another. And you know what? It seems like Jesus was that kind of person. He liked to hang out with people, right? And it wasn't just religious people that he hung out with. He hung out with all kinds of people. In Matthew 9, we read about the incident in which Jesus called Matthew the tax collector, or Levi the tax collector. He called him to follow himself. And after that happened, Levi threw a party for all of his tax collector friends. And they all came to hang out with Jesus. And Jesus hung out with them there in that dinner party. And some people weren't very happy with him because he was hanging out with people who were sinners. But Jesus loved to hang out with people, just be with them. In the second chapter of John, we find Jesus performing his first miracle where? At a wedding party. He was just there with folks as he turned water into wine. Next Saturday, I hope that we can take the time, as Jesus does, to just sit and talk with people. I hope that we will not be so busy doing the picnic that we don't take the time to enter into conversation with people, to eat with them. You remember the story of Mary and Martha, how Martha was so busy when Jesus was at her house, and Mary was just sitting there listening to Jesus in conversation, and Martha got kind of upset about it. And Jesus, I don't think he was unappreciative for what Martha was doing. She was preparing food, and somebody does need to prepare the food. But he said, what Mary's doing is a good thing. She's just hanging out with me. So I hope that on Sunday, we're able to do that, that we're able to intermingle with the people from our neighborhood, that we'll make that a priority. So I don't expect that we'll see anybody from the neighborhood sitting by themselves at the table on Saturday. Somebody from our church is going to see anybody like that and get over there with them. It's the time for us to talk with our neighbors and to hang out with them. And if you're one of those persons that's really good with hanging out with people, you don't need to be in the kitchen. Okay? Hang out with the people. And if you are in the kitchen, what you're doing is important too on Saturday. But see if you can find time to hang out with some of our neighbors in the midst of all of that. I think that often in our lives, we need to ask ourselves if we've structured our lives in such a way that we really don't have time to hang out with people outside the church. Maybe we don't even inside the church. But how are our lives structured? Do we have time to just be with people? If somebody gives you an invitation, are you able to say, yeah, I can do that? Or do we have to look at our calendar and say, no, that won't work. No, that won't. And we can't find a time to meet together. Take time to hang out. Jesus did that with people. So I've already mentioned it, but engage with people in conversation. Do that with the people around you. Do that here on Saturday. Engage them in conversation. We can talk to each other today. We can talk to each other when we're having birthday snacks today. We can do it when we're cleaning up on Saturday. But when the neighbors are here, talk to the neighbors. Get to know them. Jesus always seems to be engaging people in conversation. 2 weeks ago, Gene Miller spoke about the woman at the well. Jesus is sitting there. He's weary from travel. And along comes this woman who came at the time she came because she didn't want to meet anybody at the well. And you know, Jesus could have just sat there, right? We heard Gene say it wasn't really normal for a Jewish man to be talking to a Samaritan woman like this. It would have been totally appropriate for Jesus to just, tired as he was, sit there and rest. But he doesn't. He engages this woman in conversation. And look where it leads them. Look at what would have been missed. Jesus knew how to engage people. Now, admittedly, some of us are more gifted at that than others, right? Some people are really good at engaging people in conversation, and some of us not so good. My wife is way better at conversation than what I am. So I'm going to ask a couple of people this morning to share with us a little bit. How do you talk to strangers, or how do you engage people in conversation? So Bill Strunk is going to share with us just a couple of minutes. I asked him, give us some ideas or some things that you do. I'm looking for Bill right now. over here, if you want to come on up. And then Lou Ann's going to share just a couple things with us, too. And neither one knows what the other's going to say, so if Lou Ann gets up here and says ditto, you'll know that that's it. But Bill, share with us.
Well, Phil called me up yesterday and said, let's have me talk about engaging people in conversation. I thought, oh, my goodness, that's the last thing in the world I feel like doing. But being a dutiful servant, I said, sure, I would be glad to. So what I decided to do, I thought I'll share maybe half a dozen or so instances where I think I engaged somebody in a conversation over the last month or two. And then I'm going to psychoanalyze myself as to why it happened the way it happened. So some of these examples are things that happened here within the church or social situations within the church. And the first one that I thought of was Emma Kipfer's graduation party. I got into a conversation with Denise's father. I had never met him before, at least if I did, I didn't remember. But I learned all about where he lived, what kind of work he did, what kind of an interesting person he had been. I had an interesting time listening to him. The second one, let's see, where's Shirley? About a month or two ago in July, we had a Bontrager reunion out in Ohio. It was about a four-hour drive, and Shirley Miller rode along with Pat and I. We rode out in a car together. And I got to know Shirley like I had never known Shirley before. So, four-hour drive or so, and Pat and I, we talked back and forth and back and forth, and the 4 hours just went like that. I don't know, Shirley, out of the 4 hours, we probably didn't have 5 minutes of silence, okay? And so I had an interesting time. Another situation, I don't know if Marlene's here, Marlene Rogers. There she is. Last Thursday, I think it was, I was in Lancaster, and just kind of on the spur of the moment, stopped at a restaurant for lunch, and there sits Marlene. So I invited myself to sit with her, and she said, I don't know if she was going to let me sit with her or not, but she said, sure. And we got talking, 45 minutes, an hour maybe, something like that. I had an interesting time. Let's see. Another situation, Bill and Britta's granddaughter had a graduation party. Their parents threw a graduation party for them about a month or two ago. A lot of people there that I knew, but one of Pat's nephews was there that I don't see very often, and he had some friends along with him. So I made it a point to go over and introduce myself to them, to talk with them. Well, here, just this party was on a Saturday, on a Sunday. Here, just Saturday night, the night before, they had come back from a trip from England. Okay, they had been at some type of an equestrian event, and they were within about 25 or 30 feet of the Queen of England. So I got into a conversation. I did most of the listening. They did most of the talking. But I made it a point to go and talk with them, and I had a very interesting time. Let's see. Yesterday, Pat and I went bicycling. My wife and I went bicycling. We were over on a bicycle trail in the town of Clarence, and we got talking to a man that had ridden the same bicycle, the bicycle that he was on. He had ridden that same bicycle for 60 years. Okay. He told us some stories. It was interesting. Let's see, yesterday on our bicycle trail, or on our bicycle trip, we also got talking to a man that told us about a banjo concert last night. So we went. Now, the banjo player, he plays banjos from the antebellum period, before the Civil War. And this is something I didn't know before, but normally when you play the banjo, if you're right-handed, you normally pluck, I guess, with your right hand, and you do the other strings with your left hand. Well, he has these banjos that don't have any frets on those little bars on the neck of the banjo. And so he plucks with his right hand, and he also plucks occasionally with his left hand. Gets more music out of it that way. He sang southern ballads about romance, about death in coal mines, and about Jesus and Doubting Thomas. Okay, but if we hadn't got into a conversation with the man on the bicycle trail, we wouldn't have ended up at the concert last night. Later this week, Pat and I are, later this month, Pat and I are going to go down and be docents again at an Anabaptist kind of German museum in Maryland. In November, we're going away to Newfoundland, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and work with the 10,000 village stores up there. I know that we will have interesting times when we do these things. So, what's my strategy when I meet somebody new? Now I want to psychoanalyze myself. And if I was doing this ahead of time, and if I was Phil and have one of these things where you fill in the blanks, I would have three blanks to fill in. The first one is that I feel that I am truly boring. So I assume that nobody wants to hear about me. Point number one. Point number two, if I was interesting, why would I want to spend time talking about myself? I already know all about me. Okay, point number three. I think that it's fantastic that everyone does not think like I do. People's thinking and culture is not monolithic. And so it's easy to get people to talk about themselves. And it allows me to better understand human nature. It allows me to be a happier person, to be able to sleep better at night if I listen to other people. But I have to ask them to talk about themselves. I have to go over and greet them first and say hello, and then not talk about myself. And somewhere along the line, while I'm listening to them, I hope that I can drop a comment or two that sticks up for Christianity, for unselfish relationships, and for the Sermon on the Mount.
Thanks, Bill.
Yes, thank you, Bill. That was very interesting. I appreciate that. And I think that one of his points is the same thing I want to say. Just talk a little about philosophically, you know, why do we engage people, and which he did a little bit. And I think philosophically, first of all, we engage people because that's what Jesus did. He had compassion on people, and we want to be as Jesus is. But then practically speaking, how do I, you know, make myself meet people that are different than me or that I don't know and stuff? And I've cultivated a philosophy for myself which says that people are people. They're not that scary. And when I recognize that people are people and they're not that scary, and that people like it when other people value them and other people ask them questions, then that gives me the courage to go out and talk to people and to say, people like it when people are interested in them, which is kind of what Bill touched upon. People don't mind talking about themselves. And so that's what I've found, is that you can always engage people in conversation if you're really willing to hear their stories, because people feel like they're being valued if somebody cares enough to ask them, if somebody cares enough to spend some time listening to their story and show an interest in them. And so what I find is that if you're willing to do that, kind of like Bill said, people are willing to talk. They're willing to tell their stories because it makes them feel good to know somebody cares enough to listen. And so I try to cultivate, and it sounds to me very much like Bill was saying, just cultivate this curious attitude. Like, I'm curious about this other person. I'm curious about their experience. And I would agree, Bill, that with him, that, you know, everybody doesn't think alike, and everybody doesn't see things the same. And it's very interesting to hear how other people think in their experiences. And so for myself, I often find I'm very curious about other people's experiences. And with that curious attitude, you just start asking questions. And I know people get uncomfortable with asking questions because they're afraid people aren't going to like it if people ask them questions. But that's where I come to the conclusion, people don't mind talking about themselves. And so then you just ask questions rather boldly, assuming that people don't mind talking about themselves. And I find the same thing Bill says. You have the most interesting conversations, just hearing people's stories and hearing things about them. And so part of it is, just believing that people want other people to care about them, believing that people don't mind talking about themselves, and so cultivating that curious attitude to say, I'm going to go out of my comfort zone, because it is out of our comfort zone sometimes, because you never know where the conversation is going to go, whether it's going to go anywhere at all, but you just kind of go with the idea that people want other people to care about them and to ask them about themselves. So that's kind of philosophically how I engage with the world. And I do it, I mean, I've had a lot of experience doing it, and realize that people are people and they're not that scary. And they all have kind of the same basic human needs, which is to know that somebody cares about them and wants to engage with them. So practically, kind of when you're in getting into a new conversation, it's really, there's no formulas, so it's really hard. It's kind of flying by the seat of your pants, so to speak. As Bill mentioned, it depends on the situation, but you kind of figure out the context, what's going on. Like, if they're on a bike trip, then you're going to talk about biking. You're talking about commonalities, things that are in common. So for our picnic next week, I would suggest, if you're the kind of person that's like, I'm not exactly comfortable with this, well, you sit down, you talk to somebody, you find out their context. What brought them there? How, kind of where do they live? Just a little bit about the context. Sometimes I heard it on the way in. You can chit-chat about global experiences. I heard somebody say to somebody else, hey, can you believe what's going on down south? I mean, it's like something we've all heard about, this hurricane, and it's kind of a global experience. And actually, when we have global experiences, it's so much easier to talk to people. I remember after the Hurricane Andrew that we went through in Florida in 1992, after that experience, you could go out in the community and you could talk to anybody, because everybody had the same shared global experience. You'd be standing in the grocery line or the bank, and here people are talking like they never talked before, like, where were you at, and how did that go, and just had that shared experience. So if there's anything globally going on that, just say, yeah, what about that, and can sometimes spark some interesting conversations. And for myself, I often will, as Bill said, he assumes he's boring and nobody wants to talk about him, but, to keep the conversation going, sometimes you share little snippets of information about you, which kind of propels the conversation going. And so sometimes if somebody will say to me, how's your day going, or how are you? You think, okay, are we talking about how I am as far, you can think globally. And so often I'll say, pretty good, and talk about one little incident of the day, something that happened, something that's, not too private that you can share. And sometimes that just gives a little window into your life and helps people to feel like they've connected with you a little bit if you share a little bit about yourself. So Bill says he's boring and nobody wants to know about him. I think, that's a good philosophy to assume, to, be interested in other people, but to know also we share a little bit about ourselves just so other people feel like they've connected with you a little bit is also a good strategy. So those are some of my thoughts, because when Phil asked me to, I'm like, I have no idea what to say, but think about it a little bit, and thank you.
Stay up here a minute.
So thanks, Luann and Bill, for sharing. That gives you some ideas about how do you talk to people? How do you get a conversation going? Sometimes it's hard, right? Some people just don't open up very easily. And so I also asked Luann to tell a story. And maybe it's hard because they don't open up, or maybe it's just hard for you. And I want to encourage you to take the challenge here, whether it's on Saturday or with other people that you meet. And I wanted Luann to share one story where that was a challenge for her. And what happened?
Okay, yeah. He asked me to share the story I'd like to tell when I was at the jail. There is a difference between jail and prison. Jail is they aren't convicted yet, generally speaking, or they are for a year or less. Prison, they go for a long time. Shane knows about that, being a correction officer, and I keep telling Shane, we need good correction officers. We need good, fair people there. Anyways, I had this, this is my favorite story, because I like challenges, and this kind of goes with my philosophy. People are people. They have the same basic human needs, no matter who they are or what they've done. And so this is a guy that was, he just came back from court. He was convicted of murder and was sentenced to life in prison. And our job as a mental health counselor when you're in jail is to make sure everybody's all right and nobody's going to hurt themselves. Because if you can imagine, I can't even really imagine what it would be like to be, just sentenced to life in prison. But obviously you can imagine there'd be some despair associated with that. So the guards call me up and say, this guy just came back from court and we need to go talk to him. And I just, at first, you're like, okay, I'm afraid. Like, I don't know what I'm going to say to this guy. I have no idea what this guy's like. And then I remind myself, Luann, you're going to engage the challenge. You like this. This is fun to see whether you can do this. And just to remember, people are people, Luann. People are people. You kind of got to do this little, run this tape and give yourself a little pep talk. People are people. So I go over and talk to him, and of course, and when you're in jail, people don't want to talk to mental health people because that's considered weakness. And so his first thing is, I don't need to talk to mental health. And well, my job is to say, well, I don't want to say you have to talk to mental health because we're not going to let you go until you do. So I don't exactly say that. You say, well, I just really like to talk to you a few minutes, and you know, won't take long, you know, kind of. And he didn't want to talk to me. So we go into the room, and I invited him to sit down. He doesn't want to sit down. Like, I sat down, and it's like, okay, you can stand if you want, which to me is kind of like meeting him where he's at. It's like, he doesn't want to sit down. He doesn't want to talk mental health. He doesn't want to sit down. Okay, fine. I understand you don't want to talk to mental health. We're just going to do this for a couple minutes, satisfy the guards, that kind of thing, you know. And fine, you can stand. And so, and then I just start kind of doing what we're talking a little bit about, asking him a little about himself. Mostly just connecting with the fact that he just got off the phone with his mother, and he just told his mother that he was sentenced to life in prison. And I, as a mother, can imagine and kind of connected with him on a compassionate level, say, wow, that was probably a really hard phone call to make. And yeah, he was having a hard time. He felt really bad that he had to make that phone call to his mother. So somehow connecting with him on that sounds really tough, and kind of validating experience, and, you know, kind of, I don't know, kind of relating that way. So anyways, since I like a challenge, the fun part about 10 or 15 minutes into the conversation, he decides to take a seat. I'm like, yeah, you can, sure, have a seat. And so it was probably about a 45-minute conversation. We had a wonderful time chatting. And as Bill said before, you know, found out that he even had some history with a relationship with God, kind of encouraged him to resurrect that, you know, reconnect no matter what goes on in the future, because, of course, he was going to appeal his case. But just to reconnect with God and that God cares about him in spite of what he's going through right now. And when it was all said and done, after 45 minutes or so, I sometimes said, do you mind if I follow up with you in the next day or so? He said, sure, that'd be great. And so I left there thinking, yes, I overcame. So anyways, it's just a personal challenge, and it's fun. And, but to me, it reiterated what I know about people. People are people. They have basic human needs. And they have struggles, and just because he's convicted of murder and life in prison doesn't mean he doesn't have a mother who cares about him, doesn't mean that he hated to have to call her and tell that, doesn't mean that he doesn't have hopes and dreams for the future. And, you know, it's just people are people, and they got basic human needs that I think we can connect with. And so, Shane, that's my challenge to you. You got to be a good correction officer.
So embrace the challenge. If I can just talk about one other family member, if you don't mind that too much. Tim has a job as a youth advocate at South Park High School this year. And so he's got about 30 students that he's supposed to relate to this year, and just help them out. If they're having trouble with school, see how it's going, how's their grades going, and he gets to meet with them at least once a week. He came back from work on Tuesday, which was the first day of school. I asked him how it went. He says, okay. He wasn't that thrilled about it. He got introduced to the students. The time they have is when they're at lunchtime. And lunchtime must kind of run all day or something, lunch periods. But so somebody who'd worked there has worked there for a while, took him and introduced, and he got a chance to say hi to each of the students, but not much more than that. That wasn't that fulfilling for him to say hi. But the next day, Wednesday, he came home and said, yeah, he had a great day. He said, I just went into the cafeteria and I found those kids that are going to be my kids, and I just pulled my chair up to them and sat down with them and their friends, and they had to talk to me. So he embraced the challenge. I thought that was pretty good. I'm like, I don't know if I'd do that. But that's what he did. He said, I'll just sit with them and I'll just be there, and they'll talk to me. I'll talk to them. And they did. He had a good time. He found that much more fulfilling. So embrace the challenge. And even if it's not what you consider your greatest gift, see if you can talk to people. And I think that whole curiosity thing, that thing of people are interesting, people have a story which will be interesting to us, I think that's good for us. It's something that I try to remember, because I think a lot of times I kind of assume. So somebody starts to talk about something, and then I just assume that I know the rest of it. And then I stop asking questions and I don't get too far. So I'm trying to remember that thing. Be curious. Don't assume that you know. Keep the questions going and you'll find out more and connect with a person. Finally, I'd like to say, take the pressure off. Every time you have a conversation with somebody, and Bill and Luann both brought up a good thing in that maybe you'll have a chance to say something about the Lord, or
or share something about your faith with people, but take the pressure off. That doesn't have to happen. On Saturday, we're really just trying to connect with people and allow people to connect with one another. If the conversation gets led in that direction, great. You share something about your faith or something about Jesus, but you don't have to do that. Take the pressure off. And I think that's true in all cases where we're trying to connect with people outside the church. I think sometimes we get a little bit uptight and think, oh, this is my chance. This is the only chance I'm going to have. I've got to share Jesus with them. And if you have that opportunity, great. But what we got to do is we got to become friends with people. We got to develop a relationship with them. And so kind of take the pressure off. And along those lines, I just want to share yet from James. Picking up where I left off last in James, just from a couple of verses there, James 4, verses 13 through 17, say this. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city and spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and we will do this or that. As it is, you boast and you brag. All such boasting is evil. Anyone, then, who knows the good that he ought to do and doesn't do it, sins. Now, there could be a number of ways of applying these words from James, but in application of what we're doing next Saturday and of the times when you're trying to connect with people outside of the church, I'd like to say, let's not make grand claims and expectations of all of those connections, or even of our barbecue here on Sunday. We don't have to build it up and say, wow, this is what's going to happen. This is the way it's going to be. James kind of says, you don't really even know. You don't really have control. You don't even know if you're going to be here tomorrow. So just focus on being faithful today, I think is really what James is saying. He's saying, don't worry about all that. Be faithful and trust God. Do the things that God calls you to do. Do them now. Live in the moment with what he's asking you to do now. And trust those results of all of those things to God. So be faithful and trust God. One of the points here, I think, in James's little passage is that we should do what we're being asked to do now. Don't wait until tomorrow. Don't say, oh yeah, I'll get that done tomorrow, next week, or the next year. We do it now. He says, anyone then who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it, sins. Often we think of sin as being those things that we do that God said, don't do that. But here James says, actually, that's not all of it anyways. He says sin is when we have things that God calls us to, that God calls us to do, and we don't do it, what he calls us to. And God is definitely calling us to connect with the people outside the church. We have something to share with them, and they have something to share with us too. And so God says, connect with these people, engage with them, be full of compassion for them. So we have this opportunity, just one event, one opportunity this Saturday, many opportunities this week as you meet people at work, in your neighborhood, the places where you go to have a good time. You're going to have opportunities to engage with people. And God says, just engage with them today, because today is the day that you have to do that. I'd like to ask the worship team to come up. Again, reminding you that it's in the compassion, as we receive God's compassion, as God is compassionate towards us, and he is, we are able to be compassionate with others. Please stand, let's pray together. Father, I thank you for the many opportunities that you've given us to connect with other people. And I ask that you would remind us to be curious about those people, to remember that they are people just like us with the same kinds of needs that we have. Father, help us to value each and every person that we have the opportunity to come in contact with, Lord. We know that you value them just as you value us. And so, Lord, as we remember those things, as we remember how you value each and every person, and as we remember that everybody has interesting stories to tell us, Lord, and that in our commonality, Lord, we're actually going to be able to connect with them. Father, help us to remember those things and fill us, Lord, with compassion, with curiosity, with concern for other people. And Father, next Saturday, as we have a barbecue here, Lord, I ask that you would give us many opportunities then to meet the very interesting people that live in the neighborhood around this church. And when, Lord, it's right, give us opportunity to not only demonstrate your love, your care, your concern, but also to speak about it. So we ask for your blessing on our time together next Saturday. And I ask, Father, for your blessing in the life of each person here as they engage with others in this coming week. In Jesus' name.